Welcome to Bipolar Vortex, Tales from the Tunnel. I'm your host, Kelly Anchors, and I am coming to you live from a farm in Blue Ridge, Georgia.
Yeah, we're sitting there. The moon is up. I think that's Jupiter over there.
Oh, we're sitting in front of a beautiful barn.
Yeah.
And I have here my stepdad, Wayne Herder, and his brother, David, and his wife, Sarah, and a bunch of other people sitting around. And this episode is going to focus on their brother, Nick, my uncle, Nick, who I believe had schizophrenia. Sometimes there's some questions about the actual diagnosis, but he was a lovely, lovely man, and I loved him very much and was very happy to be in his life. It's a great story, and I just want to have you guys sit back and get ready for the Herders. Tell me a little bit about how you guys ended up with this land.
Yeah, back about 1960, our dad was interested in getting some land up in the mountains. He specifically talked about how as a kid, he used to go visit his grandparents out in Wolf Creek, Kentucky, and how he got to run loose out in the woods with his cousins and whatnot. And he wanted a place like that for us. So we looked at, I remember looking at least two properties that we ended up buying. This one bought 160 acres in Fannin County, paid $5,000 for 160 acres, which is incredible to think about now.
Yeah. How far are we from Atlanta?
We're 100 miles from Atlanta, but back then it took us 4 hours to drive here because the roads were so bad, and the last 15 miles were all on dirt road at the time. When we got up here, there were no phones within 15 miles if we wanted to call somebody or whatever.
Well, I can tell you, I was 5 years old at the time, so I don't remember everything Wayne can remember. All I heard was he had some extra money and his choice was buy a fancy car or some property in the mountains. I was as young as the six boys, so he chose to have a big playground for the family to go out and play in the woods.
And just so everybody knows, my sister and I used to come here all our lives. Once my mom and Wayne got together, so I'd be around third grade or fourth grade. So we would come here, and back then there was a house, a big house. It didn't have electricity. And there was a big fireplace. Wayne would get water off the mountain on the way, and then we would go in there, and it was pretty terrifying. Light candles and a lantern. It was pretty dirty. We'd sleep on sleeping bags. But then Wayne would make a big fire, and we would sit around the table and play poker. Do you remember that?
I don't remember
that.
Oh,
it was so much fun.
That's
yeah.
Great.
We'd sit around that table in there.
That was a family tradition. Every New Year's Eve, we would sit around the whole family and play poker.
Really? And oh, yeah, and then Wayne would have to go buy his moonshine. How would you get that moonshine?
Yeah,
local store.
Yeah.
No, a guy came here with the moonshine.
Okay. That was Jack Panner and Al. You know, this is a little bit.
I've heard that.
Okay.
He stopped by about 6 in the morning.
About 6 in the morning, Jack Panner came by in his pickup truck with a girl in there that she looked like she'd been doing meth, but that was before meth even came along. And he offered me a quart jar of his moonshine, which had leaves floating in it. So it was obviously he had skimmed it off of somebody else's still. And he offered it to me, and he said, pointing up to where Lynn and the kids were sleeping, and said, "You want to swap?"
And you said,
"Did you get your rifle?"
No. I told him get the hell out of there.
But really, when you did, I remember you always had a milk jug of moonshine. Where did you get it?
One of the local people around here. I mean,
and I tasted it once, and that is absolutely the nastiest thing I've ever put in my mouth.
Just, well, that was the fresh radiator flavor.
Oh.
Some people prefer the Ford radiators, some prefer Chevy radiators. I was always a Ford man.
I was young, but I would guess, because many of those stills were on our property because we were out of towners, it was kind of a deal that we had, at least my father had access to moonshine supply, as long as he didn't tell anybody about all the stills on the property.
Right, look the other way.
Yeah.
So how much did you guys come here growing up?
Well, growing in Atlanta, we would probably come every month. It seems like it'd be every month.
Probably, yeah.
Even in the dead of winter, we came up here a couple of times and got snowed in. We had a 42 Army Jeep. We could drive up here with that, and then we'd stay in that house without any heat and freeze to death and get up in the middle of the night, cut wood, keep the fires going.
And who ended up, I know Hunter's burned that house down. What year was that?
Late 80s?
I was in, maybe earlier than that, maybe early, late 70s.
Yeah. Okay.
Because I my money was on Jack Panners, Wayne's friend.
Well, yeah, we
son. Yeah. He used to come up here, party, drink, and we think one day the fire, either fire got away from them or they thought it'd be cool to have a big fire.
Yeah.
That's my guess.
It also happened soon after we told Jack Panner he couldn't farm our land anymore.
Oh. Because
he wasn't, he was supposed to be keeping up the road and all. Yeah. He wasn't doing anything.
So
he, it could have been him just being
a shifty guy,
being vengeful.
Yeah. Is Jack still alive?
Yeah, he is alive. I assume about 5 years ago, I saw him down at the Miss Edda's place. He was cutting the grass for
her. Oh, yeah.
Okay, so how many brothers?
6 boys.
And how many sisters?
No sisters.
I love saying that.
They didn't make it.
But anyway, let's get to Nick. So, Nick, I'll tell you, my memory is not foggy, and I was a little girl, but I remember I met Nick, Uncle Nick, for the first time, and he was on the floor, and he did a sit-up, one sit-up, and he said, okay, now I get to have a cigarette.
Yep.
One sit-up, and then you got to have a cigarette, and then sometimes a cup of coffee and a cigarette.
That's right. No, that was Nick's workout routine for a lot of years. Sometimes it was a cup of coffee, he'd smoke cigs, he'd take a break, but it always involved one repetition.
Whatever it might be.
You know what? It's better than my workout thing. I'm not even doing one, so hell, who am I to judge?
Gosh.
Did he smoke all the way to the end?
Yeah.
Yeah, he might not have the last week or two.
But I mean,
yeah, but
he didn't quit until he
got cancer. No, not real. Yeah. Not until he was deep into lung cancer. So,
he smoked a lot.
So, anyway, I think the thing with Nick, you got to realize there's a lot of history there because he was the oldest, 12 years older than me, 4 years older than Wayne.
Wow.
So, you had Nick, I think Alex was maybe a year younger. Wayne would have been 3 years. Was Alex 2 or maybe he's a year and a half because he's 11 older than me.
Yeah.
And then you got Wayne. So then you got 4 years after Wayne was Stan, 2 years after Stan was Steve, and then 2 years later was me. And the thing is with Nick, of course, he had a long life and you hear, or you know, we're all spread out and you hear stories going all the way back to Pineville about different behaviors. Both him indicating erratic behavior and him, you know, doing well enough to get by, but everybody would have seen it differently. Alex would have seen different because they were almost contemporaries. Wayne was pretty close. Me, I was 12 years younger, and so everybody saw it a whole lot different along the way.
But, Sarah, if you wouldn't mind saying what Marjorie said to you.
Yeah, I mean, I remember we had the discussion one time about As mothers, you never give up on your children. And basically, she never gave up on Nick. She always, I think, thought she would find the magic potion that was going to make everything right.
And what did she say?
Yeah. But she told me that, because, you know, it was an odd situation, as their dad, Dr. Herder, was a psychiatrist and a psychologist. And at this time, it was an 11-year-old boy who they had realized, I mean, I think all along had known.
I think he showed signs of aggression from a very early age.
From a very early age, but by 11 they had actually sought professional help for him. And the psychiatrist told Marjorie at the time, and she told me this, was that he told me to be prepared to take care of Nick for the rest of his life. And that certainly proved to be true.
Well, right. But she never accepted it.
Yeah, and she always hoped something would click. And you know, but she remembered that, and this was, you know, what, 40 years, 50 years later, was her memory was that she would always have to take care of him.
And that's, and even today, though, it's so weird because we're talking about Nick. Wayne and I have been talking about Nick, and that today, when you said that, was the first time Wayne had even heard that. Oh, yeah. So,
and it was just something I think she shared with me just in a moment where, you know, we were probably talking about, you know, I had young kids, and as a mother, you know, you always want them, and, you know, it was just kind of one of those that came out. But I remember kind of being stunned by that. And I think it was very, very significant to her.
Yeah, they said they were pretty angry about it, if
yeah,
I remember.
And she was, it angered her. You know, she didn't want to believe that, but she remembered it.
The first thing I remember when we were in Pineville was that, I guess, and I was 7 or 8 years old, that I started thinking it was a little strange was that Nick was involved, did a lot of self-mutilation. He liked to show you that he could stick a needle through his skin. Or he would get a curry comb they used on his horses and curry comb his chest because he said that would make his skin tougher. But particularly the sticking the needle through his skin.
Painful.
Yeah, clearly self-mutilation.
Wayne, you told me some incidents where he was very aggressive.
Yeah.
And
at the dinner table.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
He picked on Wayne for how he chewed.
Well, Wayne came home for his Easter, wasn't there something like that?
I remember Christmas on Henry Street.
Oh, maybe it's Christmas. Yeah, right. Yeah, he just made old smacked him in the head one at dinner table. But yeah, and then what would happen? Our father would get up, he'd grab him around the throat, slam him into the wall, and tell him, "You better not do that crap." And actually, I think after the one on Henry Street, he disappeared to the hospital in Chicago for 2 or 3 years.
Wait, hold on, the story's moving quick. This is a big Illinois psychiatric.
That's exactly right. He pulled some strings because he was pretty well connected in the mental health.
I'd forgotten about
deal.
That.
And Nick disappeared shortly after that.
For how long?
Well, so now here you got to back up a little bit because
22.
Here's the enigma, Nick. He was enamored, like I think Wayne's story's tie with my experience was he was enamored with tough guys. Envision him a tough guy. You see a picture of him as a 17 or 18 year old. He was a big, healthy guy. Probably thought he was a tough guy because I know 40 years later he'd get upset. I think North Portland High School has a pretty good athletes. And that whole rumor about fighting people, wrestling bears and stuff, Nick envisioned himself doing that, but he'd never quite be able to beat the really good guys. So then he'd come home, and I think he'd probably get a little bullyish. So anyway, that was him, kind of tough guy, but not all the way tough enough, I guess, for some of the things. But he's a healthy feller. And then, of course, see, Alex went away to school at 18. Wayne went away to school. Nick stayed home. He went to Oglethorpe, I think, probably flunked
that's
out
that's a community
year.
College?
No, it's a private university.
Oh.
Four-year college.
I don't know if he made a year or a year and a half. Made it, came back to live at Ferncliff. But you guys, well, you were probably still home, right? But whatever it was, and he was kind of around. Like some of my early stories, when he used to go with his buddies, and these guys, you know, he had a history of being a knucklehead. One of the things they did, they went out drinking, driving on the back roads in the family's new car, and they run out of gas. You remember that one? And so they got to go back, but it's a dark road like here at the farm, and so they got to figure out where to put the gas in the fill up the tank, but it's so dark they need to get their matches out.
So you can see where this is going.
So, next thing you know, of course, I was, you know, probably 8 years old or 6 years old. You know, wake up the next morning, you know, where's the car?
Well, the car blew off.
Nick and the boys were trying to pour the gas in. Kablooey, you know. And here comes Nick home with a bunch of bandages on his arms.
Oh, my God.
And then there was a time about, I don't know, maybe that was a year later, where Nick was a tough guy walking into a bar with a glass door and gave a big forearm through the door.
I didn't know that one.
Oh, yeah, it shattered and cut him all up. He came in with bandages all over him.
Well, go back and tell me. So you said at one of those times he was aggressive to you?
Oh, that was later on. So anyhow, so
I want to get back to that.
Well, this is the history. All right. So there's you got old Nick, you know, doing just stupid stuff. And so then the family leaves Atlanta and moves to Champaign. And that was right when you were freshman North Carolina,
and that's because your dad...
My dad got another job. Now, you know, he... You know, there's all kinds of story. I mean, all kinds of speculation. I was real young, but... So the family moves to Champaign. Nick stays in Atlanta.
Okay.
And I guess to sell the house. So he stays at
that's
the house.
That's the crazy thing.
Yeah, right.
Wait, what?
They
that's
leave
the
Nick,
crazy thing.
They, leave
they
Nick
left
in Atlanta
Nick alone to sell the house?
To sell the house.
Yes. After he blew up the car?
Yeah. Yeah, right. I left. They left me at home. I go, a week after they moved to Champaign, I moved to Chapel Hill. Nick's there to show the house. And that's just unbelievable.
So they leave him to show the house.
Especially with the history we have.
Well, especially his. Now, up until this time, I would describe Nick as a meathead and a bully.
But you didn't know he was...
I was a kid, but that's what I would describe, you know. And but actually, personally to me... He was always a lot of fun. We used to wrestle. I'd put a belt around his back and ride him like a horse. He'd chase us around the barn here. Oh, yeah. You know, to me, as a 6 or 7 year old, he was a lot of fun. Now, one time in Champaign, of course, there's no cell phones or nothing back in those days. They're calling for Nick at the house. There's no Nick. He doesn't answer the phone. So they call a few days later. No, do you remember all this one? Well, maybe it was after a period of time. I can't remember if it was a week or a month. My dad goes down and Nick's disappeared. And it's like, where's Nick? Well, he ends up, somehow or another, got connected. Back in the day, you know, Atlanta was a smaller town, so they gave him a detective where him and the detective went all over every seedy joint in Atlanta looking for Nick. Turns out that after a week of looking, maybe he finally wakes up and calls. He was in the DeKalb County Jail. They found him for doing something stupid, but he wouldn't tell his name or anything else. He was just set in the jail for this whole period of time. And so finally Nick comes back. They get him out of jail. So I would say that's probably, to me, one of the earlier times when he went from being a pain in the ass to there's something mentally wrong going on here, you know. So
and he was probably, what, 22?
Probably pretty young. Yeah, I would guess if Wayne, if you were 18.
Yeah, I was 18, you'd be 22. Yeah.
So how'd that house selling go?
He sold the damn house. That's what I said, the guy's an enigma. He was the smartest, crazy person you ever saw.
All right, now I really got to get back to this part
about
the hospital.
So anyway, we're getting there. Okay. So anyhow, so he sells the house. He's got no house in Atlanta. He moves to Champaign. And I forget what happened in the interim, but then Wayne comes home at Christmas time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all hell breaks loose.
So he just, like, went, he attacked you for how
and,
you
well, and the weird thing is it always, I remember this clearly, every time it happened, because it happened 2 or 3 times in Atlanta, and then the biggest one was in Champaign, but all involved me chewing my food.
Well, you know, you do chew pretty loudly. So anyhow, so I guess my recollection then is, you know, Nick goes nutso on you. And the next thing you know, I think he disappeared to some hospital up in Chicago.
I think it was the Illinois Psychiatric Institute.
But you forgot about this.
I'd forgotten about that, yeah.
So how long was he there?
I don't know. But there's another time when he also went to Peoria.
He ended up Peoria. I think, see, the one in Chicago was a high-priced place.
Yeah.
And that took some strings getting him in there. That lasted a couple years.
Years?
I think it was years. I think it was. Maybe it was a year. But it was a while. So then he come home, and I can't remember if that was the Peacock episodes happened then. I'd have been about 12 or 14. So yeah, he came back. He was probably off at school. I can't remember what. Oh, I know he tried to get him a job. I remember he was delivering Cokes and this, that, and the other. He kept getting fired. Well, then he had a deal where him and his buddy really thought it had read about peacock meat is really good. And we just had a big story in the newspaper about the local town just got these wonderful peacocks for the park. So Nick and his buddy decided to go harvest the peacocks. Same kind of guys that lit the car on fire. They go out in the country and they got, they I think they ran out of gas again. Seriously, a sheriff comes by, and they're acting goofy. So he gets them to open the trunk of the car, and there's these dead peacocks.
Oh, my God. That's awful.
I swear to God, this is true. So my poor old father had to go buy new peacocks to keep him out of jail.
So he's shifting off to the Illinois mental hospital. He's going to Peoria, but nobody's talking about it?
We probably didn't emote our feelings that well.
I mean, but even your dad was a psychologist with a PhD.
No, I don't think we did much of that. I mean, you know, it was like, where's Nick? Well, he's up in Peoria.
Yeah. But there was never a situation like, okay, here's Nick's problem. This is what we're trying to deal with it. There was none of that.
And I can't remember if the peacocks precipitated it or other stupid stuff. So,
right.
So then, of course, Nick goes to Peoria, and he was there for a little while. But he also comes down with hepatitis while he's there. And I can't remember, you know, there's the different kinds. And I think he almost died from that, though. He recovers, and then he comes home. And I probably would have been, I about 14, and you'd probably been out of college around that time, right? So then you're all of a sudden, now you think back in those days, I'm going to experiment with medicines and this, that, and the other. So you got a mixture of behaviors. So he's somewhat sort of functioned, somewhat not. But like one of the memories during that time was our dog had a bunch of puppies. Stan was still home. Steve was there. I was there out in the driveway playing with the puppies. And here come Nick driving up the car, drives right over a couple of them. And of course, Stan gets upset. And
yeah, I wasn't aware of that one.
Oh, yeah. No, that was just like smush.
Oh.
So, of course, you know, Nick's still a big guy. And he was, you know, like, screw you, you know, I don't care. Stan was upset. Because I resolved at that time I'd never let Nick beat me in anything again. And that's how I handled him from here on out.
Yeah.
And one thing that's fun about my brother Stan is he used to always think Nick could be normal. So, like, when he'd come home from college, he'd take Nick out drinking. And that was always a bad idea.
I did not know that.
Oh, God, it was a bad idea.
He's
and there
meds.
Was times, like, when Nick go to Baton Rouge, and, oh, there were some times that was actually really sad. That would be trouble. And they'd do stuff. I remember he once bought Nick a little derby. So then he went back to school. Nick walked around town all over wearing this tiny little hat on his head, and he ballooned up to about 300 pounds. Like, all my friends had told me, I was 16 at the time, how they were at the Catholic church, and Nick was in the front row, naturally, and they brought the plate around to get money. So Nick's sitting there the whole time wearing his little derby, and they come around with the little basket, like at the Catholic church. So Nick stands up, takes his hat off, and bows to the guy, and sits down. And it was like a major scandal in the town. The other thing he would do was they opened up a massage parlor in town. And it was one of the massage where you got a happy ending. And so you can find Nick whenever. Well, he used to work at, how was that place
called? The Wagon Wheel?
No. Oh. That's where he used to drink coffee.
Okay.
He used to play to the place where you saw boards.
Yes.
So Nick would get these.
Again,
illness.
It was a program.
I'm jumping around.
One of those program. Day programs.
Yeah, it's a day program, therapy, and all this sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But they would try and get him to do useful work, like put together little dog biscuits, and then they had a carpenter shop. So Nick would sit there and saw. But he went through a spell, and this is as he continued to deteriorate. He got paid for each board.
That's the kind of job I used to work in one of those.
All right, good.
Yeah.
Well, Nick was good for 1 2x4 a day. Now, here's the thing about Nick. It wasn't that he was hanging in the break room smoking cigs. He would saw one board a day. At that station, boom. 10 minutes later, boom. 10 minutes later, boom. This is old Nick. So to me, I was about 16, 17 at that time. Because that's when I say, and Nick used to like to bully. Well, he'd want to come wrestle, and of course, I'd like Nick, you know, I wrestled in high school and all that sort of
thing. By then, David was athletic.
I did some trick moves, and it wouldn't last very long at that point, because I said, Nick, no, we're not going to do any of this.
Right.
Well, but Nick also used to zone out and just stand there and just like a zombie.
Yeah.
And I think that was the meds.
The meds, right. Yeah. So as a teenager, would do like, fine, Nick, I'll turn the lights off and just leave you in here. So I'd leave the room, and, you know, and I'd come back 20 minutes later, I'd turn the lights on, he'd still be there.
He used to go out in the front yard and just stand in the front yard, and shift from foot to foot.
But, he'd do that. But then, anyway, so he'd get paid for sawing his logs. He'd beeline right down to the massage parlor, which was on Green Street in Champaign, which is right where the university is. And, of course, everybody, you know, so there would be, and of course, everybody I knew would see Nick sitting right outside the massage parlor with that little derby on his head, just grinning like a skunk,
happy as could be.
Every payday. Let's see. So Nick can tear and deteriorate, but he also had a spell in there where he would just laugh uncontrollably.
Really?
And so, like, we'd be sitting there at dinner, it'd be me, my dad, mom cooking, and Nick would just start screaming. And, of course, my father would just... his poor blood pressure would start going nutty until he'd start screaming at him and all this sort of thing. And
I never saw any of that.
Oh, yeah. No, he had a pelvic. He went for about 9 months or so where he would just carry it on. So, you know, he would just slowly deteriorate away on that.
So when did he end up going somewhere?
Going somewhere? Like, what do you mean going somewhere?
Like not living at home. Was that, I mean, did he live at home all the way until your dad died?
I think he did.
Until after you died, way after.
I think it was until she moved into Madison Avenue.
To that house.
Right.
And I think.
He would always go on day programs.
So like a bus would come pick him up and take him to a day program and stuff like that?
Or he'd drive.
What?
Oh, yeah,
he drove everywhere.
Oh, yeah. Okay, in all my life, and I've done this for a long time, no one's been able to drive themselves to a day program. In fact, that pretty much makes
Nick
you ineligible for the program.
He was an enigma. Yes.
Well, and it was not unusual. Well, like, he would drive, or he would ride around, he'd walk. That'd be the other thing. He'd walk around Champaign. It would not be unusual. He'd go down to Aunt Sonia's, the pancake place, and drink coffee. And, like, I remember being in high school, I'd get a call from Aunt Sonia's, like, your brother Nick's here. He'd be there drinking coffee, like, 5 hours, taking up a table. And, you know, coffee was a quarter or stuff, you know. So I'd go down, and I'd get Nick, and I'd say, come on, Nick, I'll give you a ride home. But then he would drive, and he'd go out and get drunk. And somehow, I think he'd make it home, but he lost the car. So... I have to load him up in the car, and we go down and find it the next day. And we drive around, and there it is. So, yeah, it was a hoot, I tell you what.
Now, what point, at some point, he went to AA, and he quit drinking. You remember when that?
Well, I didn't remember AA.
He had an AA chip. He had several years of sobriety.
Did he really? Yeah. See, I didn't remember that one at all.
Did he stay sober? Or?
Yeah.
He really,
I guess it was after he went into the group home on...
On Healy Avenue.
Healy Avenue.
But yeah, Nick had, because even I think I might have been in college, so I think it was all deterioration. Because again, he would come down, my mom would bring him to Baton Rouge where Stan was, and I'd come over. I think, you there, Sarah, the time Stan took him out drinking, and he had that girlfriend with him. And Nick comes in, and all of a sudden he starts talking about my father's burning in hell, and effing this, and effing that, and this, that, and the other. It was really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And so, of course, it's like, Stan, why'd you take him drinking?
With your girlfriend.
Yeah, with his Stan's girlfriend with and him. Stan's and, you know, of course, you know, and he's it really got graphic and nasty and everything. It's like, okay, Nick, you got to leave. I think he lived somewhere else for that. But he'd always hang out at the house, and he loved to do his workouts in the garage.
Yeah.
And he'd do his one lift, and he'd slather himself with baby oil, like the professional bodybuilders.
Sad.
I mean, this is one of the saddest things. This is before Mom got sick.
Yeah.
So he was, I don't know, maybe she had enough money to buy him that little house on Madison. So anyway, whatever it was, Nick would come home. He put on a pair of shorts and nothing else but shoes. Go out there and do his little workout in the garage. Well, I say workout. He'd lift something, smoke some cigs, drink some coffee. Cover him up with bathing. So my mom finally, you know, she didn't have a lot of luxuries. My dad died a while back, so she didn't have much money. But she always wanted a nice Davenport. For those of you who don't know what Davenport is, that's a couch.
It's a couch.
Back in the day, she called it a Davenport. She bought, I want to say it was a $4,000 couch. Beautiful, white upholstered, everything else. It was lovely. It was the pride of her life. And old Nick lathered up with baby oil about a week afterwards. Yep. Went out, did just enough exercise to get all sweaty and nasty, and went in and laid down on that damn couch
and
took a nap and ruined the thing. And I swear to God, she never
recovered
after that.
And she was such a
stoic,
not a splashy person.
She never recovered after that, I don't think. So
that's
awful. So anyway, and Nick would get a little childlike possessive in that regard. So he went through a lot of phases in his life that I observed. Everything from aggressive to just catatonic to
manipulative.
Very, very manipulative. Yeah. And that's when I get, you know, Derek, can I have a dollar for some cigarettes? No, Nick, you can't have a dollar, man. I'm tired of giving it to you.
But I think he manipulated,
Oh, he manipulated mom terribly, yeah.
Because you are right. She had actually set that house up several years before, but he wouldn't stay there.
Right.
He would come home every day and basically,
And he can be a charmer. I mean, the group home people just loved him.
Waitresses at the pancake place loved him.
There's no good way to bring this up, but your dad killed himself. What year did he kill himself?
75. February 24.
Yeah, probably. Or 75, probably. Yeah,
February 24th, 75.
75. All right, so Nick was still living with Marjorie and William.
Where was Nick then?
Well, this is something I mentioned to Kelly.
Was he at his own apartment or something?
He
was living with Stanley Hathaway and Claire, I bet.
Was he? Okay.
Because I used to think he'd get Claire pregnant, actually.
But that was
Did Claire get pregnant?
No, he did. She not get pregnant. Well, I used to wonder, though, because they were very close.
I thought that was later.
But not, somewhere in there, though, he may not have been at the house, but he was always around.
Steve would invite us to dinner at his house, and Nick would always.
That's right.
He was with your mother.
I bet he must have been with his mother.
I couldn't remember, and I have a vague recollection of it being said, was that the day Daddy killed himself, Nick was either at home or came home while Dad was out in the garage.
He would have been around all the time.
Yeah.
So whether he lived somewhere else or not, he was coming around all the time. Yeah.
So after that, the sequence of events was she tried buying him a house. Once he no longer lived with Marjorie, what was the next step?
I'm thinking, was that the Mattis house?
I thought it was the house she bought.
So she really tried for a long time. And then she did this house. The house didn't work.
Nah, it was a mess.
From the house to the group home?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Group home, wonderful.
Did she die in there? But I would tell you that when he went to the group home, the counselors there, God love them, most of them would be graduate students, University of Illinois in psychology, they managed him much better
than
my mother ever did.
Yeah.
I remember that, just him flourishing. That was that was the best thing.
Yes. Well, there was a time I'd joke with Sarah and I'd say, who's crazy, me or Nick? I'd drag him off to work, run around all the time, and then we'd call Nick, and Nick, what'd you do today? Well, I played softball, and I got a trophy.
And I went fishing. I went bowling.
And they took us to the bowling. I'm like, wait a minute, I'm dragging around to work. Nick's off bowling. And that's probably where they cut him back on the drinking. Because, I remember they rationed his cigarettes. He had to cook dinner once a night, once a week, and all this.
There was discipline.
Yeah, so, yeah. He was, that's really, he was pretty, pretty good there. I guess up until he got sick. So I'm sure somebody who studies family dynamics would say that my mother and him had an unhealthy relationship for both of them, is what I would tell you. So.
I mean, growing up, he was always there. I mean, I saw Nick as much as I saw anybody else of your brothers.
I mean, I guess
I know that might seem normal to you, but it's just not normal.
Yeah, and but I don't even understand the question from the standpoint, I guess, to us.
Because this is so normal for you.
It's your family. And I think partly I thought about
it. Yeah, you help him out.
Our family moved around a whole lot. So I think we probably tended to be tighter because of that.
Mm-hmm. I would say with Nick, too, after my mom passed and he was in the group home, he became a much more sympathetic person.
How old was he when he got found out he had lung cancer?
Probably 65 or so.
Yeah, I think that's about
it. How many years ago now?
Years.
Gosh.
Well, he passed away in December of 08.
That's about right, yeah.
Yeah, December of 08.
And remember, how long was he sick between finding out and dying?
I think a couple of years.
Yeah.
And so, Wayne, that was a time when you went through that big transition at work and you spent a lot of time with him. Was he afraid?
He was amazingly peaceful, I thought. He would pray. He went through, he received the last sacraments of the church. The priest came to him a couple of times. Talk about his disappointments from wrestling in high school.
Really? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he would talk about that. He would revisit that. But,
he's still looking at boxing magazines and stuff.
But I thought he was very peaceful and unafraid.
And he knew that he had terminal cancer? Did you?
He received the last sacraments while he was still of sound mind. So, yeah, he knew because, you know, the times I went with him, he wasn't really. He stayed at a rest home. I mean, he wasn't like an intensive care.
He was in an old folks home.
Old folks home. Right.
I think I went there to visit him 3 weeks before he died. Was I the last one to go visit? Because I went there and I remember we used to go to Steak and Shake and buy milkshakes.
I was going to say, didn't he love to have a milkshake?
That Steak and Shake, right?
That was what he would go
But he wanted to go bowling, and he'd been in a darn wheelchair. And I said, Nick, if you're going to go bowling, we're not going in a wheelchair. Mm-hmm. And he goes, okay, and he gets up and he walked out the car with me.
Yeah, we had the wheelchair in the back.
Yeah.
He walked, yeah.
And then we drove to the bowling alley. And I said, Nick, you're walking in if we're going bowling. He walks into the bowling alley. We bowled an entire, all 10 frames. I think he shot like 110 or something.
See, so, I was surprised. That's why.
Dies 3 weeks later?
Nick's doing great. Yeah. He went bowling.
Yeah, I was surprised.
He made a strike or two.
I was surprised when he passed away, yeah.
Oh, Nick.
Yep. No, it's one sense sad. And he went through a lot of phases in life. But
All right, guys. Thank you so much.
But we're just getting started.
That's right.
And we got more stories to tell.